Yeah, it's Ken Kreitzer for CBSI Services Talking Business. We're originating from our headquarters in Harrison, New York, and we are connecting with a good friend in China, and that is Gene Ray. Gene, are you on the line?
I sure am, Ken.
Oh, that's great,
Ken.
Gene. I appreciate your patience as we get started. How are you doing?
Pretty good. As you know, it's 12 hours ahead, so here it's already Tuesday morning and we're ready to get going.
That's right. The end of the day here, Monday Night Football is on actually still. Gene, you've had a long career and distinguished career in the insurance business. You worked for about 15 years at AIG and Global Head of Direct Marketing there. And you've been very active in trade associations such as the Direct Marketing Association and the and award programs. But you decided to move to China. What was the allure of moving to China a number of years ago?
Actually, a very easy decision. My boss at the time was Mr. Greenberg, who's the chairman of AIG, and he said, you're going to Asia. So I just saluted smartly and said, yes, sir. So when I first was sent out here, I was sent to Japan for 10 years, and I've done all of the rest of the time here in Hong Kong. So I've been out here for almost 25 years at this point.
Well, that's great. Maybe we can start. Just tell us a little bit about what you did when you worked for AIG domestically. I know you were very active in direct marketing.
Sure. Well, the reason that AIG sent me to Japan, first of all, was to launch a direct and later add digital marketing business. And they were determined, based on experiences that we had in the U.S. and some other countries, to grow Japan into one of the largest insurance direct marketing markets in the world. And we were successful in doing that. So all they told me to do was to essentially take techniques and methods that we were using in the U.S. over to Japan and use them there. And that's exactly what we did. So we were the first company that did DRTV for insurance. We were the first company that did home shopping for insurance. And of course, we were the first company that had any telemarketing capabilities in Japan as well. So we did a really good job there, even if I must say so myself. And we built a business, an insurance direct marketing business in Japan that was worth about $2.7 billion after only about 6 years. And then we began transferring that same strategy and tactical approach to other markets in Asia. Most notably was Korea, which I launched about 4 years after we had established the beachhead in Japan. That's when we launched Korea. Then later we went to Taiwan and eventually all the way down to Indonesia and all the way across to India.
So you've really covered a lot of areas in Asia. What has been the commonality in technique, in infrastructure that you've been able to use across all those different markets that have so many differences?
Well, that's a great question, Ken. And intuitively, people tend to think that there are such huge differences. How do you handle it? But the reality is that the only three variables that we have to manipulate are media, offer, and creative. And when you operate on a basis of scientific principles like that, of course, there are some others, but when you're operating on a foundation of scientific principles, mostly, then you're just making relatively minor adjustments for cultural issues, societal issues, and truly local idiosyncrasies. So the bottom line is that all around the world, as I think everybody does intuitively know, people are far more similar than they are different, which means that they respond to the same emotional drivers and the same impulse triggers. So that's really what I found had made us successful in AIG.
Absolutely. People are similar all around the world, have the same wants and needs. Has there been, I know you mentioned using direct response television and some of the electronic channels. Is that, are there any similarities to being able to do marketing by post office, by regular mail?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Of course, these days we call that legacy media, but absolutely, direct mail right from the get-go worked in all of the markets that I mentioned, meaning Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, all the way down to Malaysia and Indonesia. So definitely direct mail has always been in there. And as new media has become available, primarily digital media, we always added in digital media. I think the difference in our approach to many of the other competitors at that time is that when digital sprung up, people tended to see it as some sort of an exotic, mysterious, separate entity. Whereas in our world, we saw it as just another tool to add into our toolkit. It's a media or distribution channel source. So we just plugged it in there where it belonged. But yeah, from the get-go, we've always operated on the basis that the most intelligent way to approach this is by using a fully integrated multimedia approach.
Well, I think you'd be pleased at a couple of the conferences I was at this year, actually several. The printers seem to be very active in pointing out that print is still a primary media for people to make buying decisions from. And that was interesting to see, because as we all did so much work on print direct mail in insurance marketing. I should just ask, what have been some of the products that you've been able to work on over in Asia?
We've worked on almost all of the same products that you would typically see in the U.S. So that means that there's a heavy emphasis here on the senior segment, that is the 50-plus segment. So we've done a lot of what's called guaranteed issue whole life. We've done products that are called things like broken bones. They're all supplemental products, supplemental accident and health. A tremendous amount of hospital cash in maybe 15 different flavors, personal accident insurance, and some medical. What is different, though, here in Asia is that unlike a market like the United States, we hardly do any term life insurance, and in fact, hardly any life insurance at all.
Interesting. Why is life insurance a product that's been successful?
It's a complicated answer, but I think the starting point is that Asia, still every single country in Asia is still a very, very heavily agency-oriented market, meaning that all of the big insurance companies have brigades filled with life insurance agents that are going out calling on customers face-to-face. And the culture here is that they don't believe that much in paying for things that if you don't use, you can't get something back from. So basically, term life just isn't a cultural fit here, because the way term life works, as most people probably know, is you pay a much smaller premium for your benefits. But if you live throughout the term of the policy, and then the policy is over, you don't get any cash back. And that just goes against their cultural way of thinking. in most of Asia, which is why the agents are so successful at selling and whole life and universal life and variable life and products like that. That's the reason.
Oh, certainly. Certainly interesting. Great to talk. Oh, we're talking with Gene Raitt from Hong Kong. Is that where you are today? Are you in Hong Kong?
Hong Kong, which is, of course, part of China.
That's right. Now tell us a little bit about your current company and the services that you're providing there.
Sure. We have a company. I'm the chairman, which, as many people remind me, means that I try to do as little as possible and get paid as much as possible. And I say thank you very much. But we have a company called CLIX, C-L-I-X, and that stands for Customer Loyalty Intelligence Experts. So our primary focus is on customer loyalty. Another way of saying that is customer retention. However, we also have a division that focuses on customer acquisition. So we offer the full range of digital and direct marketing services, everything from strategic planning, creative development, campaign management and execution. And we do it for a wide variety of products. Of course, we still do a lot of insurance, Ken, but we've expanded into many other industry verticals. So we have a health and beauty vertical. We have a travel vertical. We have a baby food, baby formula vertical, which is kind of unique to the Hong Kong, China area. We have cosmetic, other financial services, ex-insurance. So what we've done is we've developed some proprietary platforms to handle this that come complete with apps that can be downloaded to mobile devices that connect members directly with the company. We develop the websites that manage this, and it all sits on a proprietary platform that we created that's called the Smart Loyalty Hub, which basically manages points, manages redemptions, issues awards, rewards, etc. Excuse me. And since we've been in the business for a long time, we also have the legacy type services in our shop. So we have probably in Hong Kong one of the largest letter shops left. We actually do letter shopping. We do printing. We have a call center that does inbound and outbound, but predominantly for coordinated efforts to existing clients. And we also have a large fulfillment center. So it's a full range of services. One other thing that I'd like to point out to your listeners is that one of our divisions is called GAX, G-A-X, and that stands for Gateway to Asia.
Right.
Gateway to Asia Experts, and the service that we provide, which seems to be very valuable to a lot of offshore companies who want to do business in Hong Kong or China or Asia, we operate as their local entity. So we set up a legal entity for them. We maintain the board minutes and the books, the financials, and we do as many of the services as they need. And that's been quite a successful business for us.
That's interesting, Gene, talking with Gene Raitt, who has been a longtime insurance expert in the United States and in Asia, and now with CLIX. What are some of the areas that your Gateway to Asia, some of the industries that you've been able to help find opportunities in Asia?
It's pretty much across the board, but I'll give you an example. One of our biggest clients is one that's based in Dublin, Ireland, and they're the largest company that provides employee anniversary type rewards or awards around the world. So basically, this is a company that is the back room, if you will. So if you work for a major company and you reach your five-year anniversary, you get an email from the HR department that says, congratulations, Gene, you've been with us 5 years. Click the link below to claim your award. And you click the link, and there's a website, and you can choose a variety of company-branded stuff to celebrate your five-year anniversary. And they don't want to set up manual operations in Asia themselves, so we are their Asia-Pacific arm. So we take the inbound customer service calls. We stock all of the awards and fulfill them as they're chosen by employees that they service. So that's one type. And another type on a totally different end is a company based in Minnesota that is in the IT business, but the hardware business, providing parts. And these are small custom parts. And we, same thing, we are their Asia Pacific entity. It's all transparent, obviously. It's invisible to their clients, but we take all of the Asia Pacific customer service. We do all of the fulfillment and all of the corporate and legal work required to keep them in business.
Well, that's terrific. You've really found a great spot and great opportunity in Asia beyond insurance, now marketing a wide variety of products and services across different channels. I guess the question everybody has is, especially if you're in Hong Kong, is going over into China itself, how that is as an opportunity. Obviously, we're reading about, you know, the impact of this this tariff disagreement between the United States and China. What's been the relationship there in the business community in Hong Kong?
It's been a good one, Ken. And of course, you're absolutely right. Almost everybody that's interested in coming to Asia has their eyes at one point or another focused on China, because it's still perceived as a major opportunity, just given the size. But these days, it's more than just the size. They have a rapidly growing middle class. The standard of living in China has risen dramatically, even in the past 10 years. So the market itself has evolved into a much better target for marketers of any product. And of course, when you add to that their technological advances and their approach to technology, it's really a sweet target. But of course, it doesn't come without problems. And the least of the problems, frankly, is the ongoing tariff discussions and so-called trade war between China and the U.S. That's really the least of the problems. And most people who are doing business over with China have not seen any impact or any effect on their business, including us. What's more problematic for China is their legal system and kind of dragging them into the 21st century of nations, where contracts actually mean the same. Because historically in China, people have been worried, outsiders have been Chinese companies can simply renege on a contract, and their local courts will, of course, support them over the foreigner. And frankly, that's been true. So it's somewhat of a crapshoot in the past, at least. But today that's really changed. Today, it's much more reasonable. It's certainly not westernized yet, but it's becoming closer to being westernized than it ever has before. So contracts are much more meaningful and offer more protection these days in China. But there's still loads of obstacles, as you know. They still are the world's greatest at copying things, so they have a very robust fake industry. And I don't see that going away anytime soon. So one thing that everybody is always worried about in China is intellectual property theft.
Wow, that's We'd heard that, and obviously that's been one of the concerns about trade with China is the frequency that foreign goods services are maybe copied to some degree, as you described. Interesting. Now, one of the topics, I'm just going to run by a couple of topics that are heard often in the United States, and the biggest topic this year really has been digital transformation, where companies similar to what you and I have worked in for years and years have been making the transition to communicating with customers over mobile phones through all sorts of new apps. And how do you find that happening in Asia? Obviously, it's a very sophisticated market, but is, how do you find that digital transformation in Asia?
It is a fascinating topic, and I think that if you look to start with China, since we seem to be focused a bit on that, the interesting part of digital transformation that we've seen in China is that these days, almost everybody uses WeChat. You're familiar with WeChat, right, Ken?
I think it's something new for me.
Tell
us more about that.
Okay, WeChat is a digital platform that allows people to communicate directly with each other one-on-one or form conversation groups. And it also has a commercial element, a commercial platform where it allows companies to establish a presence and actually transact business. And WeChat includes a payment gateway called WeChat Pay. So it's a very complete platform. And the first thing that I noticed in terms of digital transformation in China was a shift. This started about 5 years ago, a shift away from even business people using email as their primary communications channel to WeChat. So basically, these days in China, I get almost 100% of my communications, written communications, via WeChat, from our Chinese office, from Chinese clients, et cetera, and hardly ever get any emails. And that includes sending through large files, because if you receive it on WeChat, you can open it up and read it, of course, on any of your devices, but you can also transfer it to your desktop, and so you can still see it in a larger version. But that took some getting used to see people transform away from email to basically what amounts to a text message system. So that, to me, that was the first part of the digital transformation that I saw. And now, of course, the commercial applications have followed right along with that. And many companies use WeChat, and I'm using WeChat, but there are several other platforms in Asia similar to WeChat, and they use that as their primary solicitation channel as well.
Well, that's a new point for us. Not so evident here in the U.S. We're still using a lot of email, and I guess the other topic, and I'm thinking even to we were just at the DMA conference in Las Vegas, is there was a long profile and set of presentations on blockchain. The host of the event, Bon and Bose, said that, you know, everyone's looking at blockchain, but there needs to be someone who can explain it to the average person what it means. I guess the thought is that it's possibly something that could bring a greater sense of security to the Internet. Is that something you see blockchain being developed in Asia?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Out here in not just Hong Kong, but Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, and a couple of places in China is a hotbed of activity for development of AI, blockchain, and various iterations of big data. So definitely blockchain primarily is good for ensuring far better data security. And it is challenging to explain it to the average person in a way that makes it understandable. But we, along with others, have been working on how to do that. But essentially, it compartmentalizes your data so that the chances of someone hacking are diminished to a magnitude of at least 2 or 3, because they'd have to get in through all of the blocks in the chain. So it sequesters data, and therefore it makes it far more secure and far more controllable by the individual. So yeah, there's a lot of blockchain activity out here, along with the other latest technology.
Well, that's something that is emerging as a key subject area. I tell every college student that I meet that make sure that you understand, learn everything you can about blockchain, as well as the other key new technology, artificial intelligence, of course, and big data, trying to manage all of the billions of pieces of information that are produced on the internet every day. And
right.
We obviously have a background in financial services, especially in the payment industry, in the credit card business, and we help support travelers when they're overseas through their credit cards and payment devices. How is the credit card business evolving in Asia and in China? Is it new card brands, new institutions, or what changes are happening, do you see?
I think it's interesting that we went through, in Asia that is, we went through a period where we basically emulated what had happened in the U.S. So at one point there were just a set number of financial institutions issuing credit cards, but suddenly we had a wide variety of affinity cards, private label cards, so on and so forth. And then there was a great consolidation when that didn't work exactly as planned. And now I think for the most part, it's back to square one, where there are just a ton, of course. There's a lot of just the traditional cards, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, et cetera. And within those cards, of course, they've got some variations, but nothing like it used to be with all of the affinity cards, which here are pretty much gone.
Interesting, yeah, certainly, except I would say the airline cards are still very prominent in the United States market.
We still have airline cards. There are still airline cards, but they're not that popular, and most of the airlines, or I should say the credit card companies, to get you to sign up for an airline card, at least here, they're giving away what seems to be the store, you know, just to get you to sign up. I don't know what it's like in the U.S. these days, but companies like Cathay Pacific, which you would think wouldn't have a lot of trouble signing up people for a Cathay Pacific American Express card, they have to give away a whole load of miles to get people to do it.
Certainly. I was just curious, what kind of benefits are popular on credit cards there? Obviously, in the United States, there have been lots of warranties, travel benefits, premium services. What are some of the benefits that have been popular on payment vehicles there?
It's really a mirror of what it is in the United States, Ken. There's nothing that's that unusual here. Obviously, for the higher level cards, the most popular service here is concierge service, and a lot of people do take advantage of it because it's truly a valuable service and it works. So at the high end, it would be concierge service in general, like getting tickets, making bookings, that type of thing. But at the lower end, I don't think there's a lot of utilization. At least we haven't seen a lot of utilization of the typical benefits, the travel
sure.
accident. Most people don't even know they have it.
Well, that mirrors the experience in the United States in many situations. One of the things that I'm curious about is if mobile payments has taken off more in Asia than it has in the U.S. It seems like there were some early adopters, but not much after that here on mobile payments. You know, debit cards and credit cards still seem to be what customers are satisfied with. Has there been more use of mobile payments in Asia?
Absolutely. I think Asia, and in particular China and Hong Kong, possibly Korea, really lead the way in terms of mobile payments. So when you go into a typical convenience store here, or a coffee shop, or even retail store, it's probably almost the majority at this point of people paying by phone, you know, holding their phone's QR code up to a reader. So it's really taken off here. And there's a wide variety of payment gateways that offer that. And the latest one was launched by the Hong Kong government themselves. The Hong Kong Monetary Authority just launched. We just went to their seminar the week before last, and I already can't remember the name of the system, but basically it's the Hong Kong government's version of mobile payment. And the beauty of their payment is that they're subsidizing it, so they absorb the fees. So yeah, mobile payments here, way ahead of the U.S.
Well, Gene, we just have a couple of minutes left. I really appreciate your time and connecting with us from Hong Kong here to the New York City area. And maybe just finish by asking you, what do you enjoy? What's the best part of living in Asia for you and now living in Hong Kong?
I think it's the overall lifestyle. I think I've been very fortunate to live in two of the absolute safest cities in the world, Tokyo, for 10 years, and then Hong Kong. So when you're walking around places like Hong Kong and Tokyo, you generally have no anxiety whatsoever. You're not worried about street crime. You're not worried about carjacking. You're not worried about random shootings or any of that nature. I know that might sound silly, but honestly, after you're here for a while and all of that background anxiety goes away, you feel pretty good. So that's a huge benefit. But also the general lifestyle, the pace, the availability of anything you want. Hong Kong is very much like New York in that regard. You can find anything you want or need or like easily here. Great variety of food. Food here is better in many ways than the U.S. Fresh food, not frozen. So the taste is different. And of course, the people are really wonderful. And it's just a lot of fun to live and work, at least for people like me, I guess, in a cross-cultural environment.
Well, that's great. Great to hear that you're having a great experience there living in Hong Kong and also after having lived in Tokyo. Gene, maybe we could just wrap up by just, if you want to, briefly outline your company, Clix, C-L-I-X, and how someone can learn more information about it, your website address.
Yeah, we do have a pretty good website. It's just clix.com.hk. Actually, the easiest way would just be to drop me an email, and it's also easy to remember because it's my name, Eugene.Rait, R-A-I-T-T, at clix.com.hk. So either one of those ways, and come to Asia. We'd love to have you.
Well, we're just talking about, we'll ever make a trip out to Asia. A couple of people in our office have made trips and enjoyed it, and certainly a growing, fast-paced part of the world. And Gene Rait, it's great to talk with you. I appreciate your time today, and I know our CEO, Bob Conti, would want me to say hi for him, and I know you both go back a long way in the insurance business and working on big projects, so it's a delight to have a chance to talk with you tonight.
Thank you, Ken, and please give my best regards also to Bob and to all of your listeners. I hope you enjoyed it, and we welcome you anytime.
Very good. Gene Raitt, who is the chairman of CLIX, C-L-I-X, and Gateway to Asia. And we appreciate his calling in all the way from Hong Kong for our Talking Business segment here on CBSI Services. We're located in Harrison, New York. We provide benefit services such as warranties and travel services and premium services to thousands of banks in the United States. So for our guests, again, thank you, Gene Raitt. Thank you for joining us here on our program. This is Ken Kreitzer for CBSI Services.